That's a big, big deal. It's probably one of the biggest things we needed to have PRPA do in order to make sure we can make 100% by 2030. There are 8 others that won't go through them, but battery, transmission improvements, and whatnot. So anyway, just wanted to note those things to everybody, that in 1 year, we've made that big accomplishment, and Jane's going to talk about some other things.
Hello. I just wanted to bring up the fact that PRPA is on track to meet at least 50% renewables by 2021, which is really great news, and that's through hard work of everybody. And then also, they are considering contracts to get to 60% by 2023. So we're moving in the right direction. With that being said, they've also done some studies about ramping down the coal-fired power plant to a 30% run rate, which is going to, and I know Joe's shaking his head no.
It's they are doing that. You are correct.
Okay. So they're talking that they can do that.
They can.
Which is
they
a
can.
Good thing for me. I'm asthmatic, and the American Lung Association, of course, has us rated as an F with our air quality here. So ramping that down will stop a lot of the CO2 that's pumped in every day, over 2,400 tons a day, go into our air. So thank you, everybody. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dave Mills, and I just wanted to make a couple comments about EV charging locations. I go to the library several times a week, and I park in the EV charging location, but it's still broken. It's been broken for, I think, almost a year. And I was at this meeting a couple of months ago, and Joe mentioned that he thought he had a plan for it, and it's going to be fixed soon.
We do. And it's a matter of getting the equipment, getting it delivered. There is a great deal of backlog right now for just about any piece of capital equipment, but I do know that that is in process and those will be replaced.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, those units have been ordered.
Yes.
And they will be here within days and installed.
Within days?
They will be here in the city of Lovell within days, and then we'll have to schedule their installation.
Hopefully they'll be installed soon after. Thank you very much. And just one other comment. I'd really like to see EV charging locations in our Foundry parking lot. I heard that there was infrastructure put in place, but never turned into actual charging locations. I'm not sure about the infrastructure, but people park their car there for hours on end, and it seemed like it'd be a great place for the city to facilitate putting in some charging locations.
Which parking lot is that?
At the Foundry.
Foundry.
Yeah.
And the garage or what?
Yeah. The garage, yeah.
That'd be great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to give us any information or question? Okay. All right. We're going to move on to the informational items. There's 2 of them. Are there any questions or comments for Jim or Ryan? Hearing none, let's move on to the regular agenda. Item number 3, LUC resolution recognizing the market value of 1 unit of Cottero Creek Thompson Project water. Nathan?
If I could just introduce Nathan on this one, if I could, please.
Sure.
I know that this is a very, very significant issue. The CBT water and the cash in lieu. Staff and consultants have spent a great deal of time over the last couple of months reviewing this. As you know, several months ago, we were informed by Northern Water that we were capped on our CBT purchases. And so we thought that that might alter how we look at and what our costing is for the cash in lieu. But I'm not going to steal any thunder from Nathan, but I just wanted y'all to know that this has not been a trivial exercise, and it's been one that we've gone into in great depth and for extended periods of time, extended conversations, and I think we're very comfortable where we are, and Nathan's going to tell you all about that.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you, Commissioner. And, again, most of you know I'm Nathan Alburn. I'm an engineer with Larry and Ryan with the Water Resource Group, and this is a fairly standard presentation, kind of with updated values. Like Joe mentioned, back in July, we had our last raise of the cash in lieu. The prices have continued to increase since then, and it's not that we were ignoring it, it was just the fact with that cap, we were concerned, we wanted to make sure that this was a valid way to calculate our cash in lieu. So as most you know, if you hear much plus seeing these presentations, CBT prices have continued to escalate. You know, they had a little blurb right there after the housing crunch, but since then it's just been a steady incline and a very steep incline this last year to 2 years. If you weight the average, these are all annual prices, and if you weight this average for the last 9 months, we're at about $43,000 currently. We've actually heard and seen of prices upwards of $50,000 to almost $60,000. We haven't seen any official reports that high. The highest we've seen actually printed off the we call them Stratacon reports, and we have two units that were sold at $58,000 in September, which was the highest value that we actually have. So that kind of leads to my next slide. You can see that we averaged just the last 6 months. We've talked about this kind of going back and forth with LUC, and we'll have a little bit more discussion now. This actually shows the entire year, the years that the months we don't use for the average are kind of in this blue and purple color. The years for the average are in more of the yellow gold color. You can see that we also break it out by each transaction. So the price is in the color, and then the gray bar that's kind of inset is the actual number of units. So in September, we had a report of 100 units that were sold at $48,000. That's been the biggest price influence for this current average. We got an official report, like I just mentioned, that September actually had two units along with some others that were higher than that, $58,000, $53,000, but they were such small chunks. Plus, we got that report later than the LUC packet was formally sent out. So it's not included, but because there was actually some values that were lower than this, the overall average would have been lowered if we included that. So I know it's kind of sounds kind of complicated, but nonetheless, the point is this is our suggested average price for the resolution, and it's kind of what we have agreed upon as a staff. This is only incorporating the 6 months versus the 3 months, and part of the reason for that is we feel that it is a good balance between having the prices go up and down very rapidly, and having a steady show of the way the market trends are going. So if all of a sudden we have a bunch of shares that sell at a low number, we're not quickly adjusting, or if we have a bunch of shares that sell, or units that sell at a really high number, we're not jumping up that way either. So with that, basically it opens it up for the resolution or any questions that you have. John?
I assume Series 3 up there is the number of shares?
Yeah, Series 3, so this gray, and I probably should mark that, thank you, I didn't notice that. But yeah, that represents the number of shares, and I must have changed that without changing the actual legend.
And we're showing 100 shares selling for $50,000 a share, roughly?
These 100 sold for $48,000.
And there's still shares out there that are under contract for $60,000, 70 shares?
We've heard. We haven't actually seen the report yet. But, yeah, I've heard rumors of that, too.
I still think we're short-selling ourselves at 105.
Yeah, and we will, in a couple months, we'll certainly see that as well. And so at that time, we'll bring it back, especially if it increases the overall average by 5%.
So don't we think the contractors are looking at this stuff too and thinking, let's get our CBT cash in lieu of instead of water right now? Although I understand we want the cash right now.
John, it's a good point that you make, and it's one that was part of the questions that we've gone over for the last several months. As you know, when we were told by Northern that we got capped, we said, well, doggone it, we've been at all these years, we've been saying for cash in lieu, we want you to bring CBT. But we can't buy CBT anymore, and you're right. We have been husbanding our cash so that we can apply it to Chimney Hollow, whose price continues to, you know, go up on a monthly basis. So we said, well, what if we started to try to incorporate those construction costs? What if we try to say, here's our proportion, here's what an acre foot costs? So we went through all kinds of calculations to try to bring it back to what we're doing, which is essentially firming up Windy Gap water by constructing the storage unit. So we went through that, but what it did was it basically collapsed under its own weight in terms of complexity. It wasn't transparent, and given that the construction costs are changing, ENR indexes, the construction indexes are changing, it just was not a very transparent or a very simple calculation. So we kind of went back to square one and said, the CBT is a firm, it's firm water. It is a more or less publicly traded water. So there's nothing hidden about it. There's no hidden market. Now, sometimes sales are done off the market, but there is a great deal of transparency in this so that the entire community knows what this is, and it does represent firm yield. We obviously cannot purchase water, but this is, again, that is going to be applied to Chimney Hollow. So the bottom line is we came back and focused on saying the CBT is a market. It is a public market. It is a transparent market. It's a market that if you wanted to go out and buy shares, a person that needs the water can buy shares. So we settled on that as being the best way to represent firm yield of water. Now, your point about are we shortchanging ourselves? That's the other balance question that we're trying to do. I don't think that we're actually trying to chase the peak market price. What we're trying to do is say we need a representative number. And granted, that curve that he had before is awful steep. That delta is very, very steep, no question about it. But we're not trying to chase the last high one. What we're trying to do is also provide the development community with some continuity. And I think that's important. On the one hand, we do not want to short the utility, because I have worked for utilities who did that in terms of connection fees. And if you don't collect the right connection fee now, someone's going to have to pay for it in the future, and I don't want to do that. On the other hand, I think that as a public utility, it's incumbent on us to be transparent and also to provide, you know, a measure of continuity and prediction for the development community. That's why we settled on number one. We settled on using CBT as the benchmark for cash in lieu, and secondly, adopting a six-month rolling average rather than a three-month. And this would allow it would change twice a year, assuming that the costs change, which I do. It would change twice a year, which does provide some predictability, while at the same time bringing in what we think is appropriate funds. So your point's very well taken, but that's kind of where we ended up after a lot of conversation.
So we're gonna see another CBT price change 6 months from now, is what I'm assuming.
We'll go back to the calendar, would you please, Nathan? It would be next month.
Well, that's what we're doing right now.
I mean this month, right. And that would be 6 months from now, so it would be June, July, yeah.
So that we'll see another one of these studies then and be able to adjust again then?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we know who purchased the 100 units in September?
Let's see. I do. It was the town of Frederick.
So it's public. It's a public document. Well, this document is not, but it's public knowledge, so yeah.
So what's there's no October, November, and the reason is?
These, because they take a while for the contracts to go through and become official, the reports are usually 1 to 2 months behind. Yeah.
So we really have 8 months. We have something that's 8 months old and nothing newer than 2 months old.
Yeah, typically. We do have an October activity, which obviously is still a month and a half behind. but none of those were actually sold. They were all transferred for taps for the various water districts in the area, and one for Milliken.
Is there a reason why we couldn't get the data quarterly, at least to look at it? Because you know, I would hope that we never see curve. I mean, that's not a curve. Yeah. That's Mount Everest.
That's not a curve. You're right.
And 8 months of old price may not really be appropriate with what's happening in the water market.
Well, yeah, and I, Larry, you're absolutely right. I mean, the escalation of prices continues apace. And again, I think it's again trying to maintain that balance. We have a 6 month average that's 2 months behind. That's what we have. I don't see that there's any problem with bringing forward. We could do it almost on a monthly basis in part of the water supply report. We could say if we have any updated transaction, just simply list it. Yes.
What we've done over time is staff's monitored it, and if we saw an increase based on those averages of 5% or more,
then we kicked it over. So we could do that as well, put in a trigger, and that would provide some protection for that lag.
So I need to ask water economics level kindergarten question. So where do we buy water at then if we can't buy any more CBT units? We can only buy water from people that are selling CBT units and other units? Or
We can accept CBT units from developers. If they bring CBT units to the table as part of the development, we can accept that.
So, but additional new units that are outside development are not available to us anymore?
That's correct.
We cannot go out and pay cash for currently. Now our cap could change based on our development and our water supply. But
so I go back, we're going to use the cash now, somebody said last meeting, for paying for Chimney Hollow.
Correct, yes.
But once that's done,
won't be here. But
why would we want to take cash in if there's no more water available?
Well, and that's
once we pay Chimney Hollow.
Absolutely, that's a legitimate question. And so if we don't have a project, technically we really can't take cash if we don't have a project, you know.
Are we allowed to do that?
I don't know, legalities.
And here's the thing, we are not stopping at Chimney Hollow. We continue to look at other projects.
Right.
So it is my intent that we would never be in a position where we could not accept cash to look forward to a water supply project, either in terms of water or in terms of storage. And frankly, right now, it's storage is really the key to firming up the wonderful portfolio that Larry's put together over the last several years. That's the real key. And it has to, we need to do that with, you know, the native water. So we need to start thinking about how do we firm up some of the native water that we have.
That's Big Thompson water coming down.
Right.
Right, if I could interject a thought here, what we're trying to do ultimately is developing firm yield. So wherever that may come from, it may be CBT water, it may be water from shares in the ditches around here from the Big Thompson River that are stored, but building Chimney Hollow, which is our current big project, is in fact creating firm yield for the city, because we're taking water that we own that doesn't have storage, and we're providing a place to put it, which makes it available during the drought.
Define again what firm yield, is that the 100-year deal?
Firm yield is what you define it to be and then design your system for. In our case, our direction over 30 or 40 years now from council has been, we want to be sure the community has enough water to get through a 1% drought, if you want to call it that, 1 in 100-year drought, without curtailing its use.
What's the drought length? Just 1 year, right?
We go through a whole series of years, and in fact we're using real-time data from 1950 up to 2014, and look at the different series that are in there, and we look at, you know, as you move forward over a period of time, what's the worst thing that happens? We have a drought in that period of record that is equivalent to a long-term statistical 100-year drought, and so we use that drought as around 2002 And it really involved more than 1 year. It involves sliding into a drought and then recovering from a drought. And in fact, in 2002, as bad as it was, we got through it and got into 2003. But if our demands had been higher, we would have actually hit the bottom a couple of years later than that, in 2004 or 5. So it can be defined by a single bad year, but the effect spreads both ways from it. And so that's what we're looking at as we move through time. So we've chosen as a city to define it as a 1 in 100 year drought. And so that's what we designed for. And as long as we have an adequate design to get us through statistically, based on everything we know, 1 in 100 year drought, that's firm yield at that point. Now that means at that point we will have used everything we have. If it gets worse than that, the community has to respond in some way, curtailing use, limiting use of water, lawn water, and that kind of thing.
Larry?
Okay.
The raw water study you just did, as I recall, says that after you get Windy Gap built, you still have to have additional storage to meet the required demand that you're projecting. Isn't that correct?
Well, right. I mean, we don't have it here, but you've all seen the graph that goes up, and our demand's going here, and our different supplies are being added on. And one of the discussions we've had is that to continue accepting water from the ditch companies means that we really need to add storage somehow, somewhere, because we can give a yield that's equivalent to the average yield on those ditches. The only way we can make it firm is to store it, because half of the years it's lower than that, and some years it's vastly lower than the average. And so, yes, we do need at some point to be thinking about some form of storage for that water. And that's what we've talked about, another reservoir, maybe the equivalent of Green Ridge Glade out west of town. I mean, there are other things we could talk about, maybe trying to store native water in Jimmy Hollow eventually. It's not permitted for that now, but if we could go through that process. These are things that we're going to have to look at as we go forward in time.
So that cash in lieu is not just for our storage here for Windy Gap, into the future, and we got to stay even.
Right. As we look to those other alternatives, that's where those funds would be directed. That's why I'm saying there will never not be a project or a program that we cannot send those funds
to. We have one right now that's next.
Yeah.
And that's downstream. We've purchased a property that has storage down below our wastewater treatment plant. We have water that once we use it, once some of it's consumed, a portion of it remains reusable if we can capture it. And we can capture it downstream. So we need to develop that property. It holds water, but we don't have the pumps and pipes to put water in yet and take it out. So that's another project that will probably take $5 to $6 million, should be my guess at this point, that we'll have to think about doing sometime over the next decade or so.
Have we in fact already used cash in lieu proceeds to purchase that?
Yes.
To get us to this point?
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's storage, it's water, it's anything that makes that firm yield firm.
It'd be nice when we had the words climate change may affect your projections. So I disagreed, yes, and I'll emphasize again, I disagree with the master plan we just came up with, because it doesn't have anything with climate change.
Oh, it does. It does. There's an entire section, but it talks about the uncertainty associated with coming up with firm projections about its impacts on water supply. It alludes to potential problems that could arise, but because there is no way to quantify that, there's no quantification associated with it, but it is definitely there, absolutely.
We use the term variability.
No, Larry, I can show you in the document where it is discussed.
I read that, but there was no alternate projection or anything, so I would just...
Because there are no projections.
In my work around involving other communities even down in the Denver area, I've talked with a lot of my peers about how they're handling that. And there is no consensus yet on how to do it. The simplest thing that I've heard being done is applying an additional demand on your system, somewhere around 12%, or you can cut the supply side down. It's a number that I'm not sure is based on any real data. It's just kind of a guess on something. So, I mean, you can stress your system in that way and see what it does, and if the choice is made to use that new set of conditions, you can do that. But there's, you know, I've been watching it and looking for some formula, some way that communities can respond, and it just doesn't exist yet anyway. Everybody's still trying to figure it out.
Gene?
Yeah, you know, with the price of CBT, I know we're looking at this every 6 months, but if there's something that triggers a need to look at it sooner, we'd appreciate hearing about that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, yeah, came down to, if the staff sees it moving, which it looks like may still be happening, we'll be bringing it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no mandate or anything to wait 6 months.
Yeah, and under the formal analysis, actually happens every 6 months, but there could be some triggers that might pull that back.
Sure.
So do we have a formula or a spreadsheet that shows how much storage we think we need for match future growth and match future usage?
Yeah, we had it
in the packet here in the West.
Hmm?
In our projections, in the modeling and all, we've looked at how much storage we may need, you know, for the native water and that type of thing. So yeah. That's where my comment earlier was saying something roughly equivalent to Green Ridge Glade.
And I think in that particular analysis, there's kind of a high and low in there, so there's a band.
Yeah, but now all of that stuff kind of has that element to it, yes.
So question for you, I've seen weighted average on there, and then in the report it just says you took an average. Is it indeed a weighted average? Because to me that means the newer months get more, they get weighted heavier than the later months. So, and that would move your, a weighted average would make that number higher because you're giving more value to the last 2 months than you are to what that price was 6 months ago. So is it really a weighted or is it just an
average?
What
we've weighted it by is, you know, if you've got difference in prices and maybe you only have 2 units at a high price and 100 units at a low price,
right.
You know, you really need to weight that. We have not tried to weight them
by month.
But we've weighted them by transaction so that we come up with a true average number over whatever period of time we select. It's been 3 months or six months.
Yeah.
We've made no attempt to try to replicate, you know, the increase by saying a new month's worth twice what
exactly,
the first month
exactly.
was.
I just, to me, that's what I would call a weighted average, and that would make a little more sense to me because obviously, and you're just going back 6 months, which is good, but I mean, obviously the pricing that we're seeing in the last 2 months are much more reflective than they were 6 months ago, so you know, it just seems they should be given a little more weight. But anyway, just comment.
Maybe you can share some thoughts on what weights you'd want to use.
Yeah.
How you'd want to do that.
Simple as 6 months gets the weight of six, and 6 months ago gets a weight of one. So yeah.
What if it goes down?
Yeah. Same. It's the same thing. You're waiting. You're giving more weight to the price that's the current. The other pricing 5 months down still plays into the equation, but you're giving more credit to what the current pricing is. So.
I tell you what we could do the next time we come in. If you like, we can apply that for discussion and see what you think.
Okay.
Just a question: that the Seekage auction that was held, what did those units sell for?
The which ones?
Yeah. Seekage Farm.
About 6 or 8 weeks ago, down in Longmont.
I didn't
maybe
hear,
2 months.
I didn't hear specifically.
Well, I thought some of that was pushing 60,000 real hard.
Well, that's what I heard too. And if it's a public auction, that seems to me like a pretty good test of what the fair market value is. So I'm like John.
I'm not sure we have that in this information even yet.
It's probably beyond
the paper at 67.5. I don't know.
So I'm like John. I think we're below the market, and I think that hurts us.
Well, we can try some sort of weighting mechanism, And because I suspect we'll be back very quickly anyway with some sort of a change to keep current with this.
As prices have increased, we have seen less movement within the cash in lieu realm, and we've seen the water bank has become very active in that process. So you can imagine, you know, people start to look for alternatives, and our water bank is definitely an alternative for satisfying water rights.
Quick question, do other Northern Colorado communities use this cash in lieu approach, and if so, where are
yes.
they positioned, do we know?
Most of them do, in some variation or another. Most of them hit, as we've done, off of the price of CBT on the market. They do take different approaches. CBT water is inversely available to the native water. You get more of it in a dry year, and it's held back and stored in wet years. And a lot of communities apply a factor of 0.7 or 0.75, so they'll divide the market price by that. That makes the price even higher and pushes it up. So there are places that have cash in lieu. I think right next door to us at Little Thompson, I'm pretty sure it's over 60,000. So, you know, it varies, and there are different philosophies that are applied to it just depending on each community or each district and what their goals are.
And forgive me for one more question here, but I mean, what is, do we get feedback from developers on, obviously I'm sure they like the price, the cash in lieu price right now, but I mean, is there such a feedback mechanism that, you know, if you get it up to 60,000, they say, oh my goodness, that's terrible, we'll give you water instead?
Well, they always have the option of giving us real water as long as it's something we can actually use. And then there's the question of storage fees, which comes up, and that's a separate discussion. You know, we'll often hear comments about, from a developer that maybe is doing something here and also in another town about differences. And then we'll talk to the staff a lot of times and try to make sure, you know, we're hearing the right news and are we in line and that kind of thing. It's informal, though.
Now, the actual cash in lieu price, though, Larry, we're going to be dividing it now by 0.9.
Well, when the raw water master plan
when the raw water master plan is approved.
Right.
So that number would be divided by 0.9 and end up being, what, 47, 48,000, something like that?
Somewhere in there. Well, it's 45, yeah, it would be right up around 50.
Almost 50, yeah.
Jeez. Who would have
thought? Who would have thought?
Answer our question to Derek, I think.
Well, I'm still with Larry here.
Okay.
So, Larry, tagging on to the question here, other communities that are capped, I think Greeley might be one, that have a cash in lieu option. Once they became capped, did that in any way change their cash in lieu strategy?
You know, it doesn't typically seem that it has. It has in Fort Collins. Fort Collins for many, many years had the very same cash in lieu number, and it was very low. It was $6,000. They only changed it a couple of years ago. And they had keyed it off of developing water up on Michigan Ditch, and so it just stuck with that. I asked recently with the staff up there about their cap, and they said, no, we're not officially capped, but we know that if Northern did the calculation, we would be. So they just haven't actually come through it. Greeley is capped, Longmont's capped. We were the only city in Northern Colorado that wasn't capped, you know, up along the Front Range here until recently. And I'm not sure about the districts, you know, have a different approach. CBT is all they used when they were created, and they still seem to be able to take it. I don't know if they're out purchasing. Fort Collins Loveland was extremely busy purchasing up until a couple of years ago. It seems to have slowed down. Little Thompson, I'm not sure. So every entity has its own set of circumstances, but almost all of them key off of CBT in that price somehow.
Will we start to see a shift then between money as opposed to shares, what we traditionally seen, the ratio, and it's going to start heading more towards all money?
Money versus like CBT units?
Yeah, pretty much units, yeah.
We're not seeing too many CBT units coming in. Generally speaking, and what Nathan said earlier, the least expensive option seems to be right now to go back into the city's water bank, find credits that are available there, and there are transactions people can buy and sell those credits, and then pay the storage fee, and the combination of whatever price they pay and the storage fee is typically lower than CBT prices. So that's kind of where people are going when they can find the right to.
So they do that negotiation exclusive us. They just get the paperwork to change.
Right, yeah. We're not part of their negotiation. We just have to record that it occurred so we have our record straight.
Okay. Derek, I have a question for you as I prepare to make a motion here.
Okay.
I would like to include the actual value for the current market price in the motion. Is there any reason we shouldn't do that? It's referenced, it's cross-referenced to the resolution, but it doesn't actually include there. I'd like to include it there just for the record.
That makes sense to me.
Okay.
So that you're including the cash in lieu?
The market price.
Oh, the market price.
That's what the resolution
is. That's how the motion is set up, is to recognize the market price. Okay. So I move to approve resolution number R-04-2019U as attached, recognizing the market price of one Colorado Big Thompson project unit to be $45,368 per unit as authorized by section 19.04.041 of the Loveland Municipal Code.
Is there a second?
A second.
Okay, any more discussion? Hearing none, let's vote on it. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Anybody opposed? All right. Mr. Chair, if I can give you an update then. If you recall, a couple of months ago, we provided the update on the raw water master plan. This evening, we've gone through the cash in lieu. This part of that, or the calculations are part of that master plan, and there are still a couple of topics yet to come, which is the drought resiliency fee and the raw water storage fee. We are still working through those. We had planned to bring them next month, but we want to make sure that they're going to be big numbers, and we want to make sure they're the right numbers, and so we will be bringing those back to you in February. And then at that time, asking for, I guess, a final summation, approval, adoption of the raw water master plan prior to bringing it to city council. So that's an update on that that process.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Larry. All right, let's move on to item number four, the water power strategic plan. I think Joe is looking for an endorsement on this and any input that might have
a
critique
plan. Yeah, I'm just gonna, can you roll through that?
Sure,
as I get that? Yeah, I'm just set stuff down up here.
Okay, good evening. Thank you very much for your time this evening. Back now 12 months ago or so, the City Council embarked on a strategic planning process. And I felt that it was incumbent as that process proceeded, that, and I know that a number of other departments are doing this, that this department also develop a strategic plan so that we can know where we're going and what we're trying to do. So what I've done over the past few months is develop this plan. We vetted it with senior management staff here, the other water division, power division, all those managers, we vetted it with them. We vetted it internally with staff to get their comments. I've taken it to the senior management team of the city, the other department directors. They've reviewed it and provided some comments there. I've also shared it on a just a review basis, a courtesy basis with our regional partners down at Northern Water and up at PRPA for any comments or concerns on their part. So that's kind of the process that's brought us here tonight. What I'll be looking for, I'm going to talk about this, What I'm looking for is an endorsement on the part of the LUC of this plan, that when City Council completes their strategic planning process, which is probably 2 or 3 months out, springtime, that once that City Council process is complete, then we'll bring this before them for their adoption or approval. I don't know which of those two would be the more appropriate term, but we'll bring it back before City Council. So I'm going to walk through this, and I'm not going to go through it point by point. I hope you've had an opportunity to read it in your packet. It's short, and it's intended to be short. I did not want this to be a very long document. It's meant to be strategic, which means it's very high level. You'll not find anything in here about building a new storage tank, about undergrounding lines along a certain alignment, about potential upgrades in the future to the wastewater treatment plant or the water treatment plant. You're not going to find that in here because that's not strategic. Strategic is very high level, looking forward to about 10 years. Now, why about 10 years? And it's not fixed. You won't find a date saying, well, this is for the period from 2020 till 2025 or 2030. It's not going to be in there because we can change this as we go along. But why is there a 10-year underpinning this? Why is there a structure? Because that's what y'all have seen for the last many number of years. It's our 10-year budget. Okay? And in many respects, a 10-year budget really is a strategic plan. This is how we're going to spend money for the next 10 years. We bring forward, and we have always have LUC representatives for the water and power budget. We have LCAP representatives sitting in on the budget meetings for the PULTS, for the Municipal Fiber Enterprise. And so your involvement is there with what the structure is supporting this strategic plan. It's just that this verbalizes what is there in numbers. And we go through the 10-year O&M, and we go through a 10-year capital. And it's that 10-year plan that really is reflected in this strategic plan. So I think the other thing that's important to remember is that through that budgetary process, through that look-ahead process, the department has always had a plan. We've known what's coming up. Tanner is exceptionally knowledgeable about what's coming up. Bill has been making taking some really great second looks at some of the plans we had in the power division. He's taking a second look at those. So the 10-year budget may alter, but it won't alter what the statements are in here in terms of, say, rehabilitating or replacing aging infrastructure or building new infrastructure to support development. That strategic goal, that strategic plan, won't change. It may change by saying we don't need a substation there, or we don't need that size of a line there. It means we need to exchange a transformer. We need to put a new transformer to replace an old one. That's in here. That's tactical. That'll change. So we have always planned. It's just never been formalized and verbalized in a formal document. So anyway, this is based off of the City Council's strategic planning process. As I note here on the first page, we have a rich history that stretches back over 125 years of providing water back that far, and then since the 20s providing power to the city. These accomplishments and tomorrow's plans, tomorrow's successes do rest on that great foundation. What we are trying to do, and which I think we have done and which we will continue to do, is have a municipal utility that is reliable, and it provides quality water, wastewater services, electric power, and communication services around the clock. That's reliability. That's what we're trying to do. It's resilient. It provides excellent service under all conditions through robust infrastructure. I think I've mentioned to you before, and it's something that I will not be sharing with you because it will be somewhat of a sensitive document, but we are going to be embarking after the first of the year on a required risk and resiliency assessment plan for the water utility, and then we're going to be extending that to the wastewater and power utilities. So we will be resilient and provide excellent service under all conditions. And finally, a utility that is responsive to customers and to environmental responsibility. I thought that it was kind of fun, if we're going to have this as a publicly available document, to have some information on what the department is in terms of its people, which is the real utility. You know, a lot of people think it's the pumps, the pipes, the transformers, the lines. That's not the utility. The utility is in those photographs that's out there in that front hall. That's the utility. It's the people that are hiding in the back row back there, some of them that are hiding over here. That's the utility. So the other thing that I thought might be kind of fun, and I really enjoyed doing it, was providing a brief history of the water, wastewater, and power utilities. I think it's interesting to note that although in the latter part of the 19th century, when there was like 800 or 900 people here in Loveland, we were providing water out of the Big Thompson River. Unfortunately, we didn't get around until constructing a wastewater treatment plant until the mid-1930s under a WPA grant. Power, there were a lot of legal fights in the early 20th century for our power department with private utilities fighting each other. Very similar to what occurred down in Denver with water utilities at about that same time, around the turn of the last century. There were fights between, literally fights with guns, between private water utilities down in Denver. So up here there was the tussles back and forth. Our 900 kW hydroelectric plant, which was washed away in the 2013 flood, also the 76 flood, that did not get up until 1925. Bringing power from up there to down here. So just some interesting facts about the water and power utility. And I don't have much history on Pulse, on the municipal fiber. It's only started rather recently. So that's just a rather brief one. A strategic plan should talk about mission and vision. If you've been in some of our other meeting rooms, you've seen those statements. They are a bit long. And what we want to do is support the city's mission and support the city's vision. And so the city's mission is to achieve Loveland's community vision through innovation, dedication, and excellent service. Well, I've always thought that a public utility's mission is pretty easy: protect public health and safety. And so we do that by providing those services. The city of Loveland's vision is a vibrant community surrounded by beauty where you belong. What's our vision? To support the city's vision. That's pretty easy. So one of the things that was actually pretty easy and provided a very nice framework for this plan was the strategic focus areas that were decided upon by the city council. And they make a lot of sense from a city standpoint, and it was very, very easy to itemize those areas that we want to focus on under each of these focus areas. Public safety. Protect life and property. Economic vitality. We want to have those services here so that if Kelly Jones can get a brand new a company of some sort to come here, we want to be able to support that company from a power, water, and communication standpoint. So we want to support the economic vitality of Loveland. Infrastructure and transportation. That's what we're all about. We're about infrastructure, okay? Fiscal stability and strength. Right, Jim? Every
Amen.
if you know, I once heard, and I'll let you know a little secret here, and I won't even tell you where the state was. I was once walking with a public official, and he said that it was up to the public to do those projects that don't make sense financially. I almost fell over. I have to maintain fiscal integrity in this utility if we're going to provide services next week, next month, next year, and 10 years from now. We have to maintain, and you guys just talked about that when we were talking about cash in lieu. We want to maintain our fiscal integrity so that we can continue to do those good things. Quality of life, it's a great place to live. We want to contribute to that. Innovation and organizational excellence. Cree Goodwin, who is not here, you saw an example of some of that innovation last month with that leak map that was displayed. His group is constantly rolling out new applications that make life much easier for our operations folks. That's innovation and organizational excellence. And finally, outreach, collaboration, and engagement. Tracy Houston in the Customer Relations Department, along with everybody in the utility, does that outreach. So I went through each of those strategic focus areas and said, what are we doing that supports the city's strategic focus areas? And I'm not going to go through each and every one of these, but just to give you some idea, public safety. Right off the bat, when I said we're about public health and safety, we want to meet or exceed all regulatory requirements for the water treatment plant and the wastewater treatment plant. That's real simple. We're going to do that now, we're going to do that next year, and we're going to do it 10 years from now. We're going to continue to do that. How? I don't know. Part of it is the water quality laboratory, getting new instrumentation, making sure that we have properly trained people. All those tactical things fall under that strategic bullet. Maintain local and regional mutual aid agreements. If we get in trouble on something, and there's been some times, mutual aid. A year ago summer, we had an unfortunate death in the power division. One of our linemen was tragically killed in an accident. Our entire power operations department and basically most of the whole utility wanted to go to his funeral. Well, we wanted, things might happen out there. There might be, you know, fuse might blow. We don't know. There'd be a failure. So what did we do? We called up our friends in Fort Collins. They sent a crew down. That crew sat on standby here while all of our crews attended that funeral. About 6 months ago, we did exactly the same thing for them. They had one of their folks passed away, and their entire power operations group wanted to go. We sent a crew up there. That's mutual aid. That's going to happen now and in 10 years. Economic vitality. We have 33 key accounts, both of the hospitals, Woodward, Praxair. We have 33 key accounts. We want to maintain and expand that key accounts program. We want to support Kelly Jones so that if she says, can you come over and talk to a potential, to an applicant who's thinking about setting up a shop here. Can you do that? We support that. In concert with regional partners such as the Northern Water Conservancy District, maintain and expand the city's raw water portfolio to support existing customers while planning for growth and development. Y'all just did that. You just did that. So you can see as we go through these things, this is what we are doing and this is what we will continue to do in the future. Infrastructure and transportation, continue to replace aging infrastructure. Maintain and improve the 10-year capital improvement plans. Build on existing asset management. Make the city of Loveland future ready to adopt and leverage new and innovative technologies. That includes the municipal fiber enterprise. Fiscal stability and strength. We will run our cost of service projections. We will understand our budget. We will understand our reserve levels. This is what you do to maintain fiscal stability and strength on a go-forward basis. And there are a lot of utilities, unfortunately, that don't do that. And I have seen them. I've worked with them as a consultant. We don't. And we have that. We have Jim and his staff to thank, and we have y'all to thank for sitting in on those budget meetings every year to do that, which is going to be coming up because just as we have just passed the 2020 budget, we have to start next month on the 2021 budget process. So we're all very excited about that. You can see Bill's so excited. I see Roger's grinning in the back. Michelle's not going to be with us for about 3 months, so she won't have to worry about the first 3 months of that process. Quality of life. Deploy, expand, and maintain a gigabit speed municipal fiber broadband system. That's going to improve the quality of life. It's also going to enhance economic vitality. Innovation and organizational excellence. Continue professional staff development. It's those pictures on the wall. We want to make sure our folks know what the latest in technology, what the latest is in regulations, and we do. We send folks out to conferences and dedicated training all the time. And we continue to invest and leverage technologies. Outreach, collaboration, and engagement. I think you're going to see over the coming year even more outreach in terms of featuring what I think is the utilities, the people. I saw a list of the videos that we're going to be doing for the coming year. Those are going to be embedded on a brand new website that we hope, I expect, to be much easier and much more friendly to be able to get to different items. But that's what I really want to feature, is I want our customers, I want our citizens to know what it is our men and women are doing around the clock for reliability, resiliency. I want them to know that. And we've already had some great videos. If you haven't seen them, go out there. They even managed to make our friends in Cree's GIS group look good. I did not know how that was possible, but they did, and they came off great. They are wonderful videos. So we will continue to do that outreach and collaboration. Right now, we are engaged in the distributed energy resources effort with PRPA. Tracy Hewson and Bill Kroll are involved in that. That's going to take a couple of years, but that's another example of collaboration. So I guess that's really about it. This aligns with our 10-year budget. I think it aligns with the city's plan. And here's the thing. The city's plan can change. I don't think those strategic focus areas are going to change. And I see a nod of affirmation or saying, yes, that's correct. But tactically, things will change. Tactically, things will change on our end as well. So I think there's great alignment in both directions to this department, and I think there's alignment upstream to the City Council. And as I said, once that process is complete, we will be bringing this forward for their approval. But what I'm looking for this evening is any comments and hopefully your endorsement for me to do that when the time is right with City Council. Mr. Chair?
Any comments? Comments? Larry?
So, three things. On the water side, mm-hmm. I think it would be nice if we put in that we support the Colorado Water Line.
We can do that. What I would like to do, though, is say we support regional planning initiatives as opposed to a specific document. I think that might be a more strategic way of looking at it. And that would be under,
infrastructure?
Probably the first one. Maybe the second one. But yeah, I think we can do that.
Yeah, I think that's important since that's all of us want to be on the water team in Colorado as an unknown thing like climate change starts to affect all of us. Actually, what I sit around, it was remarkable that California, that everybody makes fun of, set the record for the lowest water use in 50 years. Part of that was luck, but a lot of that was also that. So I think that's important, and I would certainly hope that we remember that half our water comes out of Colorado River. on page, this is just, it looks to me like a typo, on page 30, page 10 or 32, whichever page you're looking at.
10? Okay, infrastructure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Second, from the bottom bullet, shouldn't it be adopted and leverage new and innovative technologies? I couldn't.
Make the city future ready to adopt and leverage new and innovative technologies in all utility sectors.
As opposed to innovative.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did change that already. You have a prequel. It's why I'm looking. Yeah, I saw that and changed it. Innovative.
On the power, just by River Power, 75% of our cost. I think I would like to see us out that we support PRPA and their 2030 zero carbon goal.
Through the various strategic initiatives such as the Diversified Resource Portfolio, continue to partner with PRPA to provide reliable, environmentally responsible, and financially sustainable power.
I think it'd be better to put the 2030 zero carbon because that's what's been passed and that's our goal.
I'm not going to agree on that. We should not have specific numbers in there because then he's having to update it all the time. He's very generally, we're cooperating with them, and I think in a roundabout way he said that. So the minute you start putting in specific plans and numbers, then you're going to cause problems with trying to keep up with making sure you're current.
I know. Part of the Power Center, that's a goal and a plan.
And we've referenced them in this document, yeah.
And I got on some other cities, Fort Collins and Longmont, and they pretty well say they support the plan, the 2030 plan, and their strategic plans are the equivalent of a strategic plan. So.
And I really thought that point covered it, but you know, it's a semantic argument.
Yeah. One quick one. As I read through it, I liked what I read, particularly near the innovation and organizational excellence, how you develop and certify and educate your staffing and succession planning. The one thing that I didn't see, and maybe it's not an issue here, but I didn't see anything regarding retaining and attracting top talent.
Should have said that. That's, yeah. Got it. And I may not put it exactly like, but it will have in there about staff attraction retention. That is vitally important. And you know, it's funny. One of the things we look for, those pictures on the wall, I know that Roger said this, I know Bill has said this. What we look for is people that are willing to dedicate themselves to this mission and value. We think we can teach anybody just about anything, okay? If you've got a fundamental basis, but we want you to fit into this culture. So that retaining, that attracting and retaining the right personnel is very, very important.
Okay, anything else?
Okay. I move to endorse and forward the Water and Power Strategic Plan to City Council for approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any more discussion?
Thought it was a well done job.
Thank you very much, Ron.
Here, here.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
Thank you all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. All right. Commission and Council reports. Steve, you want to start us off?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
First off, Merry Christmas to you all. Thank you so much. I appreciate your dedication to this commission. One of the top leaders, just my mind. I think the rest of the council as well. We've been dark for a lot. So we didn't have a council meeting on the 26th, but December 3rd, December 10th. We had one, but not much went on. With the most recent meeting, we spent a lot of time busying ourselves assigning people to boards and commissions.
So you're going to stay with us?
We're going to stay with you. So you're stuck with me unless you would rather talk to me.
No?
I appreciate being here.
You actually show up for the meetings. That's great.
I do, yeah. There, back in November, there was a resolution approving the fifth amendment to the fifth interim agreement for the Municipal Subdistrict Northern Colorado Conservancy District of Windy Gap. I think everybody got checked it. We're supposed to contribute or whatever.
Yeah. It's the chips to stay in the game.
Yeah. So it's a new year. We have two new counselors. They're stretching their wings. It's going to be an exciting year. For council, or for Steve, we are doing a lot more rule support. It's our way of being able to kind of identify some things that council thinks are important. What the rule of four does, it's if you have four counselors that say, we would like some information, it's not that it directs the city to do anything but bring back information to council. And then from that, the information is brought back into direct course of action. Sometimes it's purely, thank you very much for the information. Sometimes it results in, well, given that information, would you develop a plan to take us in this direction? So it's a fairly long process most times. One of the rules before we had last time was looking at, with the cold weather, there's some concerns that some homeless don't have a place to stay in the evenings. So it's bringing back what is available to those that are homeless, and do we need to do anything else? To shore that up. So that'll happen fairly quickly because of where we're at in the year. So I think other than that, I don't have anything, but thank you so very much. Merry Christmas.
Anybody have a question for Steve? All right, let's go on to commission reports. Barry, you want to start?
Nothing.
Thank
you. Yeah, Joe, I appreciate your focus, I think, on strategy. And I know when I was at HP, we did a similar thing. And one of the elements of that on an annual basis is what we call tactics. And so there are some tactical things that can be added onto the strategy. And that's kind of on an annual basis. But I like that.
And that's exactly what we do as we start to craft that. Drop this year off and look to the next 10.
Yep.
That's what we do is tactically, what are we going to do operationally and capital-wise over the next 10 years?
John?
Nope. This may be more of a question or request for information, but I see that within the last week or two, the contractor has been selected for the Chimney Hollow project. Is there any more information here that shared about what was in the press?
Yeah.
Based in
Bozeman, Montana, and it's the company that actually built the Pleasant Valley Pipeline, I guess it is. It takes water from the Blue River over to the Horseshoe Reservoir some years ago. It's been a number of years back. There were, in the end, two good strong candidates. By the time we came out of the process, there was enough of a difference in price that this is like the best way to go. What we've actually done is the board at Northern approved entering into the contract, but it will contain something called an administrative notice to proceed. So it will not involve actually starting construction yet, and that's because we're still waiting on the results of the lawsuit in the federal district court. The bids were entered by all parties that participated with a start time in April of 2020 or an alternate start time of November 2020. I think April is about off the table at this point, but probably November is still a viable start time. But each of them, because of the differences in when you're starting and the seasonal nature, some of the work will all be a difference. And if we get past November 2020, we'll have to renegotiate the price. Basically, what it comes down to. But hopefully, that will accommodate what's happening. But just as early or as recently as yesterday at a meeting down at Northern, we were given a report that there's nothing to report. And we just have to wait on the action of the court. So we're hoping that it happens, but. But it was $485 million contract for the construction, and that's a little more than we had thought in the past, but it's not too far off in the engineer testing since I saw. Probably, though, the delays on the settlement of the lawsuit are at this point the biggest cause of cost increases. Thank you.
And I might ask the Derek.
And just to add a little bit there, Larry's the meeting Larry was referring to at Northern was a pretty grueling 6 or 7 hour session working through paragraph after paragraph of a draft of a 41 page allotment contract, which will be the next thing that will be coming to you, a major substantive decision. Obviously, we have been spending a lot of money to participate in the project. Now that we have a contractor under contract, suddenly our financing folks and a very East Coast attorney hired by Northern to draft this contract has now been engaged to work on the financing agreements and allotment contracts and operating agreements. And suddenly, we have to get all of those in place, negotiated with 12. Or however many public entities and sign before we can borrow the money to give the contractor the go-ahead to start construction. So although we've been kind of waiting in limbo, for the federal court. We've scheduled another all-day session in early January. I would hope that by the February meeting, we will have a draft to share with you that will then, you know, probably be discussed at a study session with City Council. That's not my decisions, but there is some, you know, this is a significant contract with, you know, O&M funds, reserve funds, provisions for what happens if you miss your payment, of this collective project that we're all funding, you know, $500 million. But there's, what became evident yesterday is there's still a lot of decisions that we have to kind of make as a group. And I think it's been easy to get consensus on a lot of things with this project. Now we're going to be negotiating things like, what, you know, what happens if you miss your payment with your the storage you paid for? How are we going to operate the reservoir? Do you own the storage? Does Northern control the storage and you have the right to store Windy Gap water? Can they store, can they pre-position other water? Who do we want making some of these decisions? So it feels like we're going to be, you know, hitting some really important substantive conversations about the future of this reservoir in 2020. Regardless of what happens with the federal lawsuit, obviously that's where, you know, we could get an order tomorrow. Maybe the judge is trying to get it done before Christmas. I don't know. But any day that there could be an order from the federal court. But now, at this point, we are months behind being ready to go because we have these agreements to hammer out.
A good summary. These are issues that we've discussed for a long time, but now you're getting down to actually thinking about signing off, and the discussions get very real.
Larry, that cost is about $5,000 a meter foot. Is that comparable with similar projects in this area? Do you know?
The cost on the 90,000 acre foot it currently is, I don't remember exactly, it's about $7,280-something, I think. I have to say, I don't know of another project anywhere that could be built for that. We've looked at quite a few options here, even 10 years or getting close to 12 years ago, we did a study with Base Point Design, and there was nothing we could find between I-25 and Rocky Mountain National Park compared to the price. If you escalate those prices back, it's still very, very true. So I have to say it's the least expensive option that we have available to us.
Yeah, compared to the most expensive foot of CCD water, it's real cheap.
Oh, yes.
That's why we have to keep throwing the chips on the table.
Yeah, that's right. Randy, do you have anything?
Welcome back, Counselor. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Glad you're with us again.
Me too.
That's all I got.
Yeah. As I was coming to this meeting and I was driving down First Street and I noticed on our property facing First Street, there's a whole army of trucks and trailers and it's quite the array of vehicles. And what that is the contractor that was awarded the Pulse Colorado Boring, they're staging on our property so that they don't have to come from different sources and different sites every day. So that's what's going on. We haven't got anybody to complain yet, but I didn't realize how many construction vehicles were going to be lined up there. So that was a go Pulse. That means there's action going on. So that's a good thing,
there is.
Right?
There is.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Richard, you got
one? I don't have anything.
I was just going to ask a question about the rehab of the hydroelectric plant project, Idlewild, and the Penstock, and how's that going?
Ryan's here.
Christine left. Okay. I can give you some updates on that. We have made great progress on removing the above ground appurtenances, trusses, and so on. I believe that's just about wrapped up. We are still in negotiations with some of the homeowners up there regarding the underground penstock. We are still in negotiations with the Forest Service as far as what we need to do above the dam.
in terms of the river. So we got a lot done with that above ground work this year, but we have more work to do in the coming year. And Derek's been helping out an awful lot, and it's a long slog dealing with federal agencies and the property owners.
Well, the property owners want compensation for their water loss, but is that right?
They do.
Well, did we give them water rights?
No, it's a really long, you know, maybe want to maybe bring that back in January for a little bit more detail, what we can talk about. There are limits. How about if we schedule that for January?
Okay.
I think I can do that so I don't blow the dates or the times or put my foot in my mouth and
sure.
be castigated by my attorney over there to the left. So we'll make a note for update on that for January.
Okay, let's move into director's report then.
I have a couple of really, really good news items. First off, Michelle. Come here, please. Now, as you may notice, ladies and gentlemen that you are, it's probably unlikely that you will see Ms. Erickson here at the next LUC meeting.
I hope I won't be here.
So,
it's possible, but...
But she'll be away for a while, but she's going to come back, and so we only wish her the best. But what I really want to do is get wrapped up, and we will be bringing it to you on a very convoluted schedule, because we'll be taking it out to the Planning Commission, we'll be taking it to the CAB, the Construction Advisory Board, and eventually taking it to City Council, is the Water Efficiency Plan. Let me tell you, it was an enormous lift. It was following the dictates of a state agency, some of the direction, I'm not sure these folks ever saw water, let alone water efficiency. Michelle put that enormous document together, and she's done an outstanding job, and I am deeply, deeply grateful of that excellent job. I just wanted to point that out, and for all of y'all to say goodbye, good luck, and we'll see you when you get back. So I just want to do that. So Michelle, thank you so much.
January to the middle of March, and then we'll be bringing it to the LUC probably at the April meeting for you guys to present it to you, and then going to CAB, Construction Advisory Board, Planning Commission as well in April, and then to City Council for to adopt it in May, and then going to submitting it to the state for approval prior to June 30th.
And I have one other piece. If you'll remember last month, excuse me, I really enjoyed, and I hope you enjoyed as well, the presentation that Tim Bowling gave on our laboratory staff and the water quality staff. And one aspect of that was when he discussed the efforts that had gone on up at Green Ridge Glade as far as algal mitigation, algal testing, and the mitigation to prevent the taste and odor issues. I had an email today from the director of the New York City Department of Water Supply, the environmental quality for New York City. They are struggling with taste and odor issues in their reservoir there. They researched and they found that what we had done, what the city had done, what Tim and Ruth and all the team up there had done, and so they've asked if we could have a conference call with them, share some data, share some ideas, and provide some guides to them. And I think what that request says, what is the, it reflects the quality of the folks that we have working in our laboratory and in our treatment plant that from three, you know, I guess about, what, 2,000 miles away in New York City, they want to tap their, not my, their expertise for a very serious taste and odor problem. So I think that's something to be enormously proud of. And again, it gets back to what I said earlier. The utility is not the physicality. The utility is the people that are on that board out there in the main hallway. And I think we should all be very, very proud of that request. And I'm really looking forward to speaking to them. We're going to get together via phone after the first of the year. So that's all I have, Mr. Chair, okay. Except to say, everybody have a wonderful holiday season, a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year. Please be careful out there. We'll see you all in January.
Nice. Anything else anybody else has? All right, we're adjourned. Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Yeah, but it's...